The devotion to the Blessed Virgin contributed much to the establishment of the gospel amongst the Scandinavians. From time immemorial, they had deified virginity in the person of Fala, whose fair tresses were bound with a golden band, and Jason, who, after their death, admitted virgins into her heavenly train. Three virgins, seated under the sacred oak, disposed of the fate of men, and those white ladies were also virgins who, gilded over the lakes like a pillar of mist, sat at midnight in the freezing shadow of the pines and sang with a soft, low voice the runic hymns which the Skalds had engraved with the point of their swords on the rocks that overhung the sepulchral mound of the heroes whom the ravens of the air mourned. It was hard to set aside those charming northern fairies who introduced themselves invisibly into the peasant's cot and the jarl's fortress, and whose coming was sure to bring good fortune. These superstitions, equally cherished by the high and the low, could never, perhaps, be totally eradicated without the Blessed Virgin, who became the protectress of cabin and palace. The influence of the Queen of Heaven on the conversion of the Scandinavians is proved by a fact which none can dispute. It is that Christianity owed its success among those nations to the mothers of families who afterwards gained over the warriors. The first Christian kings of Denmark were faithful servants of Mary. Saint Canute, Duke of Schleswig, dedicated to her three superb churches. Waldemar II placed her image on his shield, and having learned that the Russians, leagued with the Estonians, threatened the rising of the Church of Riga, he solemnly pledged himself to pass the following year in Estonia, as well as for the honor of the Blessed Virgin, as for the remission of his sins. It was in this war, commenced under the patronage of Mary, that the Danes, surprised in their camp, lost their national banner. As they began to give way before the pagans, the Blessed Virgin, whom they had piously invoked before leaving Estonia, gave them, it is said, a sensible mark of her powerful protection. A red flag with a white cross fell from heaven, according to ancient chronicles, and with that flag victory returned. The devotion to Mary flourished long in the three kingdoms of the north, as is proved by the great number of cathedrals, hermitages, and monasteries which they dedicated to her. When the scorching wind of the Reformation had blighted that fair flower of Catholicity, this devotion was still secretly maintained, and 50 years after Luther, Mary was still venerated in the subterraneous chapel of the Cathedral of Uppsala. This consoling devotion ended in those far northern regions as it began in Rome amongst the tombs. It was under the influence of Mary that Prussia and all the coasts of the Baltic Sea received the light of the gospel. Amongst the nations of Slavonic origin, who substituted Christianity for their bloody rites and polished their names under its civilizing influence, no people were so devout to the Virgin as the Hungarians. Towards the beginning of the 11th century, Saint Stephen, the first Christian king of the Huns, or Hungarians, founded Our Lady of Aboroya in thanksgiving for a victory obtained over the Prince of Transylvania. This fair Slavonic basilica vied in magnificence with the most sumptuous churches of the East, its walls adorned with superb sculptures, its marble pavements, its altars overlaid with gold and encrusted with fine jewels, its vases of silver, gold, and onyx were marvelous to behold. Over the Virgin's altars were perfuming pans of silver, in which two old men, whose cradles had been rocked to the exploits of Attila, had the rarest perfumes of Asia burned. Processions came several times in the day to honor the Mother of God in her sanctuary. All this splendor was not sufficient for the piety of the Hungarian prince, descended though he was from the scourge of God. It was his pleasure to hold his crown in subjection to the Virgin, whom he declared sovereign of his states. Thus, as often as the name of Mary was pronounced throughout the extent of that vast kingdom, there was not a Hungarian noble, no matter how high his lineage, who did not bend the knee and bow down as a vassal before his liege lady. Within the fortified walls of every castle, there was a small chapel lit by several brass or silver lamps, which burned night and day before Mary's image. The Prince Palatines even carried the same image to battle, and raised an altar for it in their tents. The devotion to Mary was kept up with no less fervor on the banks of Vistula, dating from the day when the Dumbraka, the fair Bohemian princess, converted King Mieczysław and made him break the idols which his fathers had raised to Pogoda, calm air, to Pohist, the cloudy sky, and to the gloomy deities of the abyss. The Poles became essentially Catholic, and built numberless chapels of larch wood in honor of the Mother of God. Pagan banners, taken on 20 battlefields, were the only ornaments of these primitive churches, nestling amongst the evergreen pines of the Slavonic forests. But when, during the celebration of Mass, the ministers of Jesus Christ read the gospel to those northern heroes, kneeling before an altar as poor as the crib of Bethlehem, every sword was seen half-drawn from the scabbard, in token of protection and defense. Nor was this an idle show. Poland was long the bulwark of Christianity. Were it not for John Sobieski, the crescent would, perchance, have crowned the battlements of the cities beyond the Rhine. Poland was early consecrated to the Blessed Virgin. Mary was solemnly invoked under the title of Queen of Poland long before John Casimir renewed that consecration. As often as the Polish army moved against the Tartars, it was Mary's banner that led its stately cohorts. The name of Jesus, twice repeated, was their battle cry, and a hymn to the Virgin, their war song.